Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
Right now, I am absolutely really thrilled to have on the line Guguletu Moyo, the executive director of the Tucson Jewish History Museum and Holocaust History Center. Gugu, good afternoon to you. Thank you for being with us on Chai FM.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
So I was ecstatic when I read about this Jewish history museum that I knew nothing about. And then I read about the new executive director. I saw your name, Guguletu Moyo, and I thought, now that is fascinating because that clearly started off somewhere close to home. Tell me about yourself. How did this journey happen? And I'm fascinated.
Wow. Where shall I begin? How did I get to Tucson? The short version.
Where did it start? Zim.
Where was I born? Yeah, in Zimbabwe, and I grew up in Zimbabwe. I left Zimbabwe, I think, in 2004, I think, and moved first to Namibia and then to London, and now I live in the United States with my husband and child in Tucson, Arizona. So, yeah.
Tucson, Arizona. My goodness me. That's unusual to say the least. The executive director of the Tucson Jewish History Museum and Holocaust Center, how did that come about?
Soon after I moved to Tucson, the Jewish History Museum happened to be looking for an operations director. And I applied for that job, primarily because I was just interested in working in a Jewish organization. I saw that particularly as a sort of unique opportunity because largely speaking, sort of mainstream Jewish, organizations here, don't necessarily, have a lot of Jews of color working for them, and I was particularly attracted to the work of the museum because our museum teaches human rights, as it were. You know, we teach the history of Jewish people in this particular location, and we also teach Holocaust history, but in a sort of through the lens of human rights. So we teach about anti-Semitism, but also connect it, you know, to other forms of discrimination. And of course, Holocaust history, we teach that particular history, but we also teach about other genocides. And, as a person who had been working in human rights for many years before that, I was particularly interested in doing this work primarily because we teach, you know, our biggest audience is really school age children who come to the museum.
How do you keep yourself motivated? Because I'm looking at a world where anti-Semitism is growing by the day. Mm-hmm. We are seeing more sort of emboldened. Let's just look at what happened at the march on the House not too long ago. I mean, people are not embarrassed to be seen as Nazis anymore. Do you think there's still a place for Holocaust education?
Oh, absolutely. It's needed now more than ever. And I think what is clear about, or at least in my mind, what is clear about when I observe those kind of incidents, like the people who were at the Capitol wearing Camp Auschwitz shirts, who were carrying hate symbols, including Nazi symbols. It's clear to me that we need to do more to educate people about that history. You know, what I think was just stunning was there was a congressperson her name has slipped from my mind, who at the start of that riot addressed a crowd of young Republicans and said, you know, Hitler was right about one thing. I mean, you know, to me that was just, you know, deeply shocking. And it still is, it surprises me to say the least that this person is still an elected official in this country. But the fact that this person was saying, you know, Hitler was right about one thing, addressing young people and trying to encourage them to reject an election or whatever it was. Most of those people were white supremacists. I see that as, you know, that we need to do more to teach that history. We are basically competing, you know, this is somebody who is seen as a respectable person. Like when children are, you know, at a young age deciding what their careers might be, we'll say, well, you know, you ought to become a legislator and so on, run for Congress and so on. So they look up to people like this, this particular legislator.
My take, and I don't know if I'm completely mm-hmm. out of line here, is just that maybe this is just too mm-hmm. reactive. After all these years of Holocaust education since mm-hmm. 1945, millions spent on museums in almost every city in Europe and even in South mm-hmm. Africa and in the United States, it seems to have achieved nothing. And I'm wondering whether one doesn't need to weaponize the law more and take mm-hmm. a more, full-on approach like mm-hmm. an organization like Shirat HaDin to actually bring cases against these people, because education doesn't seem to have worked.
Achieved much. No, I'm not sure that it hasn't achieved much. I think that, you know, this is difficult education. It's trying to teach empathy, which is what we're really trying to teach, right? Is a difficult, business, you know, is a difficult educational sure. task. And, I think that what it is, what the problem is we're competing with false information, right? Which is what makes the role of museums, I think even greater at this point, because museums are, I think, the trusted places within the community. And we just have to do a better job of teaching. And that's why I think teaching young people is particularly important, right? And we at our yeah. particular museum are seeing, we're mainly speaking to people when they're still young, before they have had an opportunity to kind of, you know, form their own opinion, you know, sort of form strong anti, sort of white supremacist or whatever it is, you know, thoughts. And I think getting people early and teaching people the history, and what we do particularly well is at this point, there are actual Holocaust survivors that people get to meet at the museum. It's really hard to deny that the Holocaust happened when you get to meet somebody who says, yeah, this is my story. I lived through this. This was my experience. Sure. And they live in your own city, right? They're not somewhere else. You know, I think that this is the difference between trying to compete with the information on the internet and so on. At the museum, we're able to introduce people to the stories of real Jews, as in people who they can see in their own community, or whose grandchildren they can see, whose children they can see. They can meet me as a Jewish person. And I think that, I don't think we're achieving nothing. I think that we just have to work a little bit harder in many respects. And also,
when I was reading, those people when I was reading up about your background, Gugu, mm-hmm. I read about the fact that, about the Gukara Hundi. Mm-hmm. And I thought maybe right. you could just address that shortly, and whether there'd ever been any justice after that.
No, I mean, there'll be a long road to that. You know, many of the people who were involved in who were perpetrators, who were orchestrators of Gukara Hundi are still in power. The president of Zimbabwe is alleged to have been really the mastermind of that Gukara Hundi campaign. So it's understandable that those who are in power are not going to allow themselves to be investigated for this. There was a government a sort of established commission of inquiry in the 80s. The report that was produced by that commission was never made public. There are various organizations that have gathered evidence in the 80s, and they continue to gather evidence. I do believe that there will be justice one day, maybe not now. You know, people continue to tell these stories, including people like me, who say, well, this happened to us, and we haven't forgotten. But yeah, you know, justice is
that's why I wanted to raise it too, because right. this is literally mm-hmm. next door. I mean, we could get in our car and we could drive up the road. It would be in Zim in a couple mm-hmm. of hours. And I think most of us don't mm-hmm. even know what it was. Maybe in just one line, just remind mm-hmm. those of us who have forgotten, what it involved.
Well, it's hard to sum up in sort of quick summary, but, basically soon after independence, Robert Mugabe, I guess decided that he would crush what were his opponents in part of southern Zimbabwe, and some military units were trained in North Korea. They were then deployed to Matabeleland, Midlands, a rather large part of Zimbabwe, and they basically went out killing, people and sort of seeking out what were called dissidents. So there were people who had been fighters in the Liberation War who had then been, after the war had resettled into some of the communities in southern Zimbabwe. And what these government military people went and did was they went and murdered people, some at least 20,000 people, it's estimated, probably more, in largely in Matabeleland, but in various parts of Zimbabwe. And it is, I think, has been classified by genocide scholars as a genocide because if the victims were Ndebele people and the ways in which they went about killing people was by identifying people who didn't speak Shona, for instance, who were ethnically, whose ethnicity was Ndebele. And so most of the victims were of a particular ethnic group in Zimbabwe. You say you don't know about it. Many Zimbabweans don't know about it. So I lived through this thing as a young child. But, when I, for instance, was older and lived in Harare, many of the people that I was friends with denied and would say, this didn't happen. And those were the days before we had, the kind of journalism that we have now where, there are cameras everywhere and so on. And so even people who lived in the same city, depending on where they were at that time, so in Bulawayo where I was, or in Wulawayo, there are people who didn't experience this.
I'm so sorry. We're out of time at 6. We got to end it and go to news. But thank you for what you're doing. You're obviously perfectly placed to head up the Tucson Jewish History and Holocaust History Center. Thank you. Thank you for doing what you're doing. Oh. And thank you for talking to us.
Thank you for your invitation. Thanks. Bye.
Chai FM, your station of choice since 2008.